one of the great theatre songs. And and on Thursday, in fact, Nick Heitner, who directed the Nationals production, will be in your seat. And so hopefully that will come up again with a bit of luck. It's interesting how some of these songs recur again and again. Many people have chosen the same songs.
Sure. And it took me, you know, when you sent me the email, said, what about the songs? It took me 90 seconds to write. I mean, and I didn't know what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But they just come, you know.
Yeah. But of course,
love me tender, if I loved you.
Yeah.
There's a yearning here, isn't there?
Indeed, as there will be for the next song and the next show. I mean, what's interesting is, of course, Carousel is an established classic. You have created a classic. You didn't create the classic, because of course, but you made a show into a classic. Blood Brothers has become your biggest ever hit. 21st year now in the West End?
23rd year in the West End. But we did 3 years on tour before that, and it's in its. It tours concurrently with the West End.
Right.
So, I mean, seriously, how blessed am I to have Blood Brothers and Joseph? And that was another one that I came about. Absolutely by chance. As I said, you know, you're Everton or Liverpool in Liverpool, and in those days, we're talking now 25, 26 years ago, 1983 I think it was, 28 years ago, you were Bleasdale or Russell. And I'd done all of Alan's shows and didn't really know Willie. And knew all about Blood Brothers because it created a big stir and had come to London and was at the Lyric with Barbara Dixon, and I steadfastly would not go and see it because there's a musical about Liverpool and I'm not producer, so I'm going nowhere. And if I do go, I know it'll be rubbish anyway. So eventually a wonderful film director called Alan Parker said, you must come. And we went to see it together, and it was, I think Barbara Dixon was off that night, and it was 60 people in the auditorium, and I sat down absolutely ready to hate it. I promise you, I was going to hate this. And again, it was West Side Story. I was just mesmerized by it, and I walked out, and I said to Alan, there's no God. And he said, what? I said, that's my show. I know how to make that a hit. And he bought me the album. And I phoned up the wonderful Tom Earhart, Willie's agent. And Willie had just given the rights for the tour to Robert Fox. And John Conti was going to play the boxer. Was going to play the narrator. And that toured and wasn't a huge success. And I met Willie on a train going back home to Liverpool. And I just sat down with him and I said, you know, I think I know what to do with Blood Brothers. I think there's something about it that's me, and I know. And basically he wouldn't let me. So what we did was we got a rep license and we did it at Hornchurch, and to his eternal credit, Willie came out to Hornchurch. It wasn't a very good production, and he and I drove back, and he told me about a play called Shirley Valentine he'd written, but he couldn't think of a girl from Liverpool who could play it. And I said, what about Pauline Collins? And he said, she's not from Liverpool. I said, I promise you, she's from Liverpool. And we bonded at that moment. So I said, would you just give me the touring rights to Blood Brothers? And I will take on the direction, and I promise you, next time you come and see it, it'll be good. And he did. He gave me the touring rights, and we toured.
That was with Kiki D.
With Kiki D, yeah. We toured for, and Con O'Neill, who was fantastic, Warwick Evans, and we toured for 2.5 years. And he didn't want it to come back into the West End because he'd been really bruised and hurt by what had happened originally.
The real production only ran 6 months, didn't
it? Yeah, and didn't do all that well. And it was right at the end it started building its own momentum. And mine is a very different production from that one.
Yeah.
And it was finally on what must have been the fourth or fifth first night at Liverpool Empire, when they're all on the field. I mean, if you want to see Blood Brothers, go and see it at Liverpool, because that's where it's. Go and see Jersey Boys in New York, go and see Blood Brothers in Liverpool. He finally turned around to me and he said, okay, let's bring it in. And we brought it to the Albury. I'm a bit long-winded on it, but we brought it to the Albury because something had flopped. And everyone said, you are barking to bring that in. And I said, I just think this is, again, another one that the people would have. And I remember we had 10 days to get it up and get it on. And we had 10 previews. And the first preview was £1. The second, we had about 40 quid in the box office. Second preview is £2. Third preview. So until we got the 10 previews, we never charged more than £10. And on the first night, Kiki D, God bless Kiki D. I remember in rehearsal, I said, Keeks, could you move on the line? And I said, what? I said, could you move up? She said, walk and talk at the same time. And I said, yes, I can't do that. She said, and she really couldn't. She was R2-D2, she really couldn't. But I remember on the first night in London, were you there? First night at the Albury? Too young. First night at the Albury in London. The end of the show, the two boys are dead, and she puts one hand over the other. Bit of Bill Kenwright, obvious direction there. As they die and they sing, Tell Me It's Not True. And the bridge at the back, huge big iron bridge goes up. And Liverpool Skyline, unlike No Tramps or Lime Street, is actually revealed at the back. And this big, the girders come back and the bridge comes up. So Keeks comes and she tells me, and we're all crying in the auditorium. And the bridge, I promise you, goes. And you see a stagehand's hand kind of and it keeps going, and it eventually one of the girders on that side just goes and falls on the bridge, and the whole, which was a huge metal construction at the back, the whole of the bridge fell. It could, if anyone on it would have killed it, but Kiki just didn't know what was going on. Tell me it's not. Sang the whole of the song with the bridge. And it got rave reviews the next month. Said the special effect at the end was fantastic. It's true. The bridge fell down on the first night. And even then, we had no idea. It got, Blood Brothers always gets okay reviews and fantastic reviews. And it took about 6 or 7 weeks. And then we got notice from the Albury.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to be a player. And I said, I'm not giving this up. And we moved to the Phoenix.
And you've been there ever since?
Been there 21 years, ever since.
And gone through tons of leading ladies.
Yeah.
I mean, Stephanie Lawrence then took, the late, great Stephanie Lawrence took it to Broadway for you.
Stephanie, can I tell you a Stephanie Lawrence story? Yeah. Stephanie Lawrence was just wonderful, but slightly barking. It's like all great leading ladies. And we got nominated for 7 Tony Awards. Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? Nominated for 7. You got to win one. We didn't win one. But on the Tony Awards, they have a dress rehearsal. And it's full of pros, and they obviously have to announce a winner. And they tell you beforehand, listen, you're not the real winner. And Stephanie wasn't there for the rehearsal, but she was upstairs getting her makeup on. And the rehearsal came, and they said, and the winner best actress is Stephanie Lawrence, Blood Brothers. And you're supposed to go, and we heard, ho, ho, and she left the microphone, ho, ho, she came running, and she thought she won it.
Oh.
And she gave the speech, and she thought that was it, and in her curlers. And I said, Steph, so she didn't win it. But Blood Brothers was another one that we got notice after 8 weeks on Broadway. And I went to see Jerry Schoenfeld, who became my godfather on Broadway. And I said, you're going to need the bulldozers to take me off. He said, what do you mean? I said, I'm not coming off. And he said, what are you talking about? You can't say that. I said, I'm just not taking it off. It's going to stay. I've got David Cassidy and Petula Clark. Where those two names came from, God alone. I said, I've got David Cassidy and Petula Clark doing it. And he went, honestly, he went, well, Bill's here with me now, and he's got David Cassidy and Petula Clark. We'll give him and there was a play called Kentucky, not fried chicken,
Kentucky
with the guy with the funny lip, Stacey Keach, was coming in there, and they put that in over the road, and they let me stay on. And then I had to phone up David Cassidy. And David Cassidy was living above a garage in LA, hadn't worked for 2 years because he got a big problem and was out of it. Absolutely. I mean, not out of it mentally, but just out of it. Just da-da-da. And I rang, didn't have any management, and I said, hi, it's Bill Kendra, da-da-da. Would you be interested in doing Blood Brothers for me on Broadway? Didn't know what I was talking about. And he said, well, I'm not working. And I said, look, There's a wonderful part in it called The Narrator. I love your voice, because I'm a big David Cassidy fan of his voice. So, long story short, I flew him from LA. I had to send him the money out there because he had no money whatsoever. Flew him to LA to see it. And he went to see it at the Music Box, and Everton were playing Leeds that night, I remember. And I had a long journey home, and I got in the car, and he rang me, and he'd seen it the night before. And he was wonderful, and alcoholics and drug addicted people have a habit of talking. And he talked for the entire 4-hour journey, and basically he said, I couldn't play The Narrator. And I said, why? He said, because I wouldn't do it well for you. Because, listen, for want of a better word, I've been the star all my life. And I don't see The Narrator as the star role. Mickey is the star role. And I said, no, The Narrator. I gave him all the sell that a producer does about what a star role is and da-da-da. And right at the end of the journey, just as I'm coming off onto Edgware Road, he said, can I say something to you? I said, yeah. He said, give me the role of Mickey, and I'll score you a home run. And I went, it was 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, and I went, you want to play Mickey? He said, yeah. I said, okay, fine. Put the phone down. Rang my general manager, because it was, and I said, how old is David Cassidy? And he said, 48. And I said, a Mickey 7 at the start of the show. I said, I've just offered him Mickey. He said, oh. I said, you better go over to the hotel and see what he looks like. So nobody had seen him. So he walked over and he came out and he said, he looks great. He looks fantastic. And he played Mickey, and he looked 19. So then the Petula Clark thing came, I got him. Petula had turned it down in London, and she's a great mate, and she flew over to see it. And the theatre was a gog, because Petula's big out in America, bigger than here. And she saw it. We went back to her place, and we talked. She said, I can't play a Liverpool monk. I can't. And we talked from midnight till 4 o'clock in the morning. I said, I can't. I just can't do it. I'd do anything for you. I cannot do it. And anyway, they don't know me here. I said, Petula, you get off at the airport, they stamp your passport and go downtown, and you get in a cab, they love you. They love you here. The cast, when they knew you were coming, she said, no, I can't. And she said, I can't for 4 hours. And I looked at the clock, and it said 10 to 4. And she suddenly went, you want me to do it? I said, yeah, I'll do it for you. And out of the blue, from nowhere. So I had them both. I got both of the people. I lied to Jerry Schoenfeld. And David then said, my brother and I have always wanted. And Sean Cassidy was a big teen idol over there. So Sean came along, and he was a real talent. And we finished the English, the Stephanie cast, on the Saturday, all went home, and you know how much money you need to take on Broadway. And we took $74,000, and they all went home. The next week, when the Cassidys and Petula opened, we took something like 300, we were sold out, 390,000. And Jerry Schoenfeld, God bless him, he died last year, sent me a text saying, you have made believers of us all. And it ran for 4 years on Broadway. That was a triumph. That was turning that one. Right? They call it still the miracle of Broadway, because it, bad reviews, it got stinkers. We went after the opening night, and we thought, Jack Tinker came over for it with quite a few English critics. And Jack wrote a 2-page review of it the next day. And I promise, he said, if Elvis Presley, Judy Garland, and Frank Sinatra had come back for one night at the Music Box, they couldn't have got a bigger standing ovation than Blood Brothers. We got a 7-minute standing ovation. The cast came back eventually in their civvies, because they were still ready for the party. And we went to the party thinking, this is it. I'm the king of Broadway. I was called away to Cyrano Coyne's, the publicity, to see all the reviews come in, and advertising agencies and Broadway are fantastic. You always have a great big table, 1 o'clock in the morning, with fruit. Fruit on it, and cherry tart, and always fruit, and and croissants. Where they get them at 4 o'clock in the morning? And they switch on a bank of television sets, and there's 8 television. And the first one came on, and it said, Willie Russell wrote the book of Blood Brothers. Willie Russell wrote the music of Blood Brothers. Willie Russell wrote the lyrics. Willie Russell gives me the willies. Blood Brothers is bloody awful. And, you know, and all the advertising people are sitting with taking notes so they can get things. And they went, well, there's no quote there. And they were terrible reviews. I mean, terrible reviews. And I had to walk back to the party where British Television was there, and Gloria Hunniford was interviewing me, and she thrust a mic on. She said, well, were they great? I cried on television. And Diana Ross was there, and she came over and she grabbed older than she had. It was the greatest musical I've ever seen. But it got crucified by the American critics.
And it still gets those standing ovations every night now.
Every night, yeah.
And here's Tell Me It's Not True, sung by Barbara Dixon, who created the role. The thing about Blood Brothers, of course, is it's set in your hometown, so it's a hugely personal show to you, and it's a town where you still have huge links, not least through Everton, which we could spend the rest of the evening talking about that, but since this is a theatre night, we won't do that too
much. My family are still there, you see, and you, two things. People from Liverpool are from Liverpool. They're not from England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales. They are Scousers, they are Liverpoolians. If we wanted to put anything on our passport, it would be Liverpool. It's like a world of its own. It's very like New York, and it's no coincidence that extraordinary 1960s popular music revolution started in Liverpool, because we were a port, we absolutely felt forgotten by the government, by the rest of the country. You know, we got our movies a year after everyone else. We never got any shows, and we used to go down at lunchtime to the Pierhead, which was a very, very busy port in those days. Or the merchant seamen would be stacked up the ships, and the merchant seamen would come into Liverpool with these little round things. We were used to 78 RPM records, but they had little round things called 45s. And in the main, they brought into Liverpool black rhythm and blues music that people in London hadn't heard. And I promise you, we used to go, we're gonna keep that away from the Southerners or the Birmingham, blah, 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 blah. And we got all of these songs. And my school, Liverpool Institute, was half a mile away. Paul McCartney, George Harrison, John Lennon, Jerry Marsden, they'd all be down there getting the music from these American music from the... And it's not just a coincidence. We went into cellars to sing these. You know, that world, that revolution came from a feeling of, again, being unloved. And yeah, that's why we went downstairs into cellars. So, yeah, we do love. We've got chips on our shoulder, I have to tell you. But we, you know, the highest of highs and the lowest of lows, people from Liverpool, and it's just the most special place in the world to me. And again, you never meet an Everton fan. You meet an Everton fanatic, and you're looking at the big, it's like that to me. It's like a drug. Wherever they are, on a Saturday or a Wednesday, I have to be. And I don't mean I want to be, because I do want to. I have to be. I've got to be there. When I was 6 or 7, there was a footballer called Dave Hickson, who was the real Roy of the Rovers with the blonde quiff, and Dave was our centre forward, and known as Dirty Davy because he'd go through a brick wall for you. And I, no matter what was going on in my life, I always felt when I got there on my own at Goodison Park and stood, and that team came out with Dave at the start of it, I was safe. I was absolutely safe. And it's that Liverpool family thing that, that pulls me there all the time.
And you ended up owning the club, which is...
That was mad. talk about madness in your life. You know, my favourite line is not from She Loves Me. It's Stephen Sondheim's Passion. Loving you is not a choice, it's who I am. And when the club was in a terrible situation and became available, did I have 30 million to buy it? My Jenny, who's out there now, I hope, she had to, a lawyer came round to see her, and she had to sign a legal document saying, I accept that the man that I live with is a madman, and he's going to sign away everything we have to buy this football club. And I did, and we bought the football club with two friends. And I had nothing in the bank, and they had nothing in the bank. And we just bought the football club hoping. If you did it now, you really would be certifiable. To do it then was stupid. But I'm the only football owner, club owner, who's not a multi-millionaire or billionaire. And it's hand to mouth every single week. Yeah. I was on the phone for 2 hours walking down here trying to get a centre forward who wants 110 grand a week. A week, £110,000 a week. So. Yeah. It's mad.
But and yet you inhabit these two worlds, football and theatre, and juggle the two constantly.
Yeah, and not successfully, I have to say, but I do juggle them. Yeah, I do, and other things.
So it's been a pretty unusual career, to say the least.
You mean it is a pretty unusual career? Because it's not over. I seriously think I haven't started yet. I think the I promise you. I think the headmaster's about to come in and say, okay, Ken Wright, get back to your desk and do some real work. Because what we do, guys, ain't work, is it? Come on. Digging a manhole, that's work. Or putting the electricity up, that's work. But what we do is we sort of have a bit of fun. It's painful. Yeah. It really is painful. But I don't get up in the morning and think, oh, I'm going to do a hard day's work today. I get up in the morning, oh, do I have to do that today? But it's not hard work. You know, we should all count our lucky stars.
And one of the lucky things is having someone like Caroline, who's about to sing one of my favourite songs as well as your favourite songs, A Very Unusual Way from Nine.
I'm not going to let her get up there without saying something. I didn't, to my shame, didn't know Caroline well. And I'm involved in a Gershwin project with Leslie Brickus. And we did a workshop, I think, 5 or 6 weeks ago. And I arrived with the rest of the audience. And she was standing by the piano. And she was the leading lady in the workshop with Clive Rowe. And I can't remember what it was. And I went, oh, wow. And that even today, especially today, there's something fantastic about seeing something that you go, that's for me, that's real. Whenever I audition, whenever I direct, I say, less is more, keep it simple, go for the truth. And I promise you, she's not heard me say this to her, I was mesmerized by her that day, and I'm so thrilled that she's here. We met backstage 10 minutes ago, and singing the song.
And you gave Michael Sheen, her cousin,
first West End job. Many Michael Sheens, her cousin. And this particular song, you know, you go through, I audition a lot, and you go through song of the day, song of the moment, and it was always that song from Pippin. What's the song?
Corner of the Sky.
Corner of the Sky. Okay,
That's my favourite song.
Is that, yeah. I promise you, not as much as if you'd heard it as much as I have. But someone came in and sang this song. And again, yearning, the lyrics. Oh, it is. And it's just a fantastic, fantastic, beautiful song, which she's going to sing beautifully, I'm sure. Gentle, nothing. I've never heard it without filling up, ever. Even at the auditions when she sings I Am What I Am for You, I go, oh.
And one other little connection. We said Michael Sheen was your first West End, his first West End job. Ben, our pianist, also worked for you. He was in Joseph.
In Liverpool, he does. So he knows my mum.
There probably isn't an actor who hasn't worked for you. I mean, on your Wikipedia entry, and we know that's not reliable, but they do say that you've probably employ more people than the BBC.
Well, I don't understand Wikipedia and all that kind of stuff, because I can't even switch on a computer. There was when I first started, there was a wonderful, fantastic lady called Rennie Stepham who booked all of my shows and Cameron shows and Paul and Duncan shows, and she booked it on a great big white cardboard, and she'd say, okay, May 17th, I can get you £350 from Sam Bell at Bournemouth, then you're going to Aberdeen. It was always Bournemouth to Aberdeen, and she had these big, great big white cards, and to go and spend half an hour with Rennie Stepham was like total gold. And if you come to my office now, which you have been, all of my life is run from great big white cards. I still do it now because I know nothing about computers.
Right.
Judi Dench taught me how to text. Her chubby little fingers told me how to text. And I can text, but I can't. Wikipedia. What is Wikipedia?
It's an online encyclopedia.
Oh, online. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. So, yeah, it's been, you know, I think actors are extraordinary people who put themselves on the line. I live with one every day. They put themselves on the line, and I'm very, very lucky. I love the fact that I employed loads of them. I love it. Yeah. Absolutely love it. Thank you.